Hello, Patreon! Back again, it's the Facts of Geek Life. I am the titular Charlie Carden, coming right back at you with not only a new regular contributor to the Secret Friends Unite podcast network, but also a show that for the very first time I have no experience with. And I gave that to my friend Jen Watson, who you will see if you're watching us on video. Jen, good evening.
Hello.
Hello. Jen is has become a regular fixture over on Code 47, our Star Trek podcast, and I have no doubt in time you will end up hearing her on some of our other shows as well. But Jen, before I jump in and read the summary of this program, how did you end up picking this one?
So the show is Sequest DSV, and we're going with the first season. This is the show that basically got me into fandom spaces at all. As it was airing, I was probably in junior high, or even earlier than that. And this show just really kind of grabbed me. It had a talking dolphin. It had a cute boy. It had all the kind of things that a preteen girl that is into science fiction and fantasy is kind of interested in. So I really liked it. I was a big fan of it with like my very best friend, Allie. I'm still friends with her. And I actually asked for some of her input with this episode.
That's great.
We'll get into that a little bit. But she's the one who got me into Star Trek in the first place. She's the one who got me into comics in the first place.
I got her into some
Sequest. Yeah,
I think we met her when we were all together at C2E2. Wasn't she at the booth?
She was not.
But she was number. She was dressed as number one.
No, different
girl. You know who I'm thinking of.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Well, I would love to meet your friend someday in our comings and goings because it sounds like she's pretty awesome. And maybe if she's ever into it, we could have her on one of our shows if she's much into fandom. That's cool. Well, without further ado, this was great because, again, when this aired, and I'll read the summary here, it aired between 93 and 96. I was graduating high school, and then I was in college during the time that this was on. But because of that and because of my interest in other fandoms, comics and Star Trek and stuff, I was aware of it. It was a network TV show. Let me just jump right on here. Yeah. So Sequest DSV, stylized as Sequest DSV. Okay, that's I don't like their stupid notes. Anyway, American sci-fi series created by Rockne S. O'Bannon. What a name. He sounds like a leprechaun. It originally aired on NBC between 1993 and 1996. Its final season, it was renamed Sequest 2032, which is interesting because we know that the show in this first season is in the far future of 2018, which is now 5 years ago.
Right?
The ship prefix means deep submergence vehicle. That's DSV. Originally mixed as a high drama and realistic science fiction, it starred Roy Schneider as Captain Nathan Bridger, designer and commander of the eponymous naval vessel, the Sequest. DSV 4600, Jonathan Brandis, the cute boy, Lucas Walenak?
Walenchek.
Walenchek, thank you. Teenage computer genius, not at all like Wesley Crusher, placed on the Sequest by his father. And what's interesting, I jumped right into this without watching the pilot and getting all the background, but it seemed very unnecessary because I'm like, all right, he's a kid. He's on the ship. He's like Wesley Crusher. It's like, basically, wouldn't do hard to figure out.
Yeah.
And then the rest of them are just, you know, kind of cut and paste like officer people. Stephanie Beecham as Kristen Westphalen, the CMO, chief medical officer and head of science. The opening episode, Schneider left the show and his character was replaced by Michael Ironsides. Oh, we're definitely doing this whole series because I would love to see Mr. Starship Troopers be in charge of this deal. Also present was a dolphin character called Darwin, who due to technology advances was able to communicate with the corniest, like, voice that I just absolutely adored. Steven Spielberg expressed interest in the project and served as one of the show's EPs during the first two seasons. So, Jen, you entirely pick the episodes. We pick four of them. We kind of find that during the hour format of The Facts of Geek Life, 4-hour-long episodes are great. And if you're watching something like The Simpsons that my friend Candy McFarland and I do, we usually do 6 or 7 because it fits. And The Simpsons is better for riffing because we don't really try to look for themes or stuff. We just go through quotes we enjoy, but this is a little different. So anyway, I'm going to jump right in. Okay. I'm going to read the summary of the episode as listed here, and then I'm going to let you take it over. Okay. And I will punctuate my notes kind of where it makes sense. So we start with episode 9, Bad Water, directed by Brian Spicer. Writer is David Kemper, from November of 1993. Commander Ford, Dr. Westphalen Lucas, and Lieutenant Krieg are trapped on the surface of the ocean as a hurricane rages above them. Meanwhile, suffering severe damage from a lightning strike, the Sequest must desperately search for a sunken French submarine before its passengers, all children, run out of air. Jen, take it away.
Let's see. So I remember this being among the really genuinely good episodes that I liked. I mean, most of the first season was genuinely good, but one of the things that I liked about this one in particular, it showed a very competent crew taking care of each other and of the problems that they had on their plate. Unlike a Star Trek where you might have that moral dilemma, like, oh no, do we save our people who are stuck on this raft up above,
right,
or do we save the children? It's not a question. We save the children. Our people are competent enough to know what to do in any given situation. And they do. One of the people who is up on the raft with this one is Lucas, and
the Wesley, the
teenager. Yes, he's the Wesley. what they do is that he speaks about being scared, and there are ways in which the adult crew members do kind of all sort of foster him in a way. Krieg is like his cool, weird uncle, and Westphalen and Bridger become sort of mom and father figures to him. So when I was a kid watching this, I took some of those lessons to heart, that it's okay to be afraid. And as an adult, we pass this on. We mentor those in our care. You can have hope in the middle of a disaster, and that's not corny or naive. You can be afraid and still do what you need to do. And there is this montage at this point in the episode of competence as the lightning strikes the Sequest, and they're only able to have one station at a time going. They're like, we can give you one station at full power, or all stations at some power. And Bridger says, I want all of them. One at a time, and everybody works together to make this happen and make it work. And they find
very Starfleet. Very Starfleet.
Find the kids. Yeah, it is very much that. So I like this one. They have Darwin plays a part too, where Darwin has to go find the raft and then tell everybody where they are. It's just a lot of people being resourceful in the face of danger and coming together and working together.
So for that reason. I liked it too. I very much liken this too, and it was only a couple of years prior. It was funny, we were talking about season 5 of Next Generation on an episode that we did of Code 47 very recently. But this really reminded me of the early season 5 TNG episode Disaster, but without the counselor Troy and all the bickering, because in that episode you had, you know, Chief O'Brien being, you know, advocate of, you know, Troy, and then you had Ensign Roe being Ensign Roe, where you're right, everybody really, really pulled together. And yeah, it was, you're right, it was, hey, we got to save this, this, it was a French sightseeing sub in the Caribbean, and they were all, you know, teenage kids. One of the French young ladies, it was a really familiar actress, and I forgot to look her up, but I saw her in something else. But again, you and I talked earlier when I was watching this show is 100%. Hey, it's that guy.
Yeah.
Hey, it's that guy. It's this guy. Like the Krieg was in a couple of episodes of Quantum Leap, and it was funny because this is NBC, so you get lot of the same people who are in Quantum Leap, which is another show that we cover in this segment. Missy Merchant and I have done the first season of Quantum Leap.
watching that about the same time as this too. So
right. Yeah. I almost feel like, because when Quantum Leap ended in early 93, this was a fall show. So I almost feel like there was a momentum that kind of pushed into like, oh, that's what there's where all these people got their pay. Because they, you know, were still, you know, contract players in Universal, if that was such a thing. But I love that Ted Raimi, who's Sam Raimi's brother, Sam Raimi, who's a, he's a Michigan State guy, same as me. And he's and a Michigan guy, which means Ted is as well. Early in the episode, you hear Lucas speaking French to the, but before badly. He goes off on the mission, really badly, terribly. But then Ted Raimi jumps in and his French accent is much, much better. So I really did like that. So yeah. I love the futuristic, and the French sub ladies have fancy snazzy, like shiny jackets and stuff. And I just love the future, because this was, you know, this was 25 years ish into the future of when it was being filmed. So it's not quite as bad as, Back to the Future Part 2, where it's 2015 and we don't have flying cars and stuff. Now that it's 2023.
They made this a little bit more realistic, I think. I mean, yeah, talking golf and whatever, but like, you've got the cats with the buttons on the YouTube now, so it's similar to that, right?
Exactly.
It's so subtle, some of the futuristic stuff, not just in this episode, but some of the other ones where it's like, you don't even realize it. Like, they've got flat screen TVs, and that was a subtle, like, ooh, futuristic in
90s. Yeah, right.
But like, now it's like, okay, it's just a TV. Like, I didn't even notice it.
Right. And and there's some things they can't get away from. Like, you know, their graphics look very, you know, Atari, you know, like doot, doot, doot. And even the special effect, like a lightning bolt when it hits the sub and it goes down, it's like crackle, crackle. It looks like something you could have gotten out of the video toaster we had when I was in high school doing the morning announcements that I was a part of, you know what I mean? But, but yeah, I like this. I agree with you. It was great to see, you know, the crew doesn't fall. Oh God, we're all going to die. And you know what, everybody know, you know what, they suck it together and they really do make things work. So what did I say? Oh, I thought this was funny on all the episodes. At the end of every episode, they have a real life science guy who comes on and what did I write? He comes out at the end and does a little mansplaining tutorial about the oceanographic science featured in the episode. And Peacock, which is where this is available if you'd like to go watch it, tries to cut it off. So you have to back button it real quick, otherwise he's gone.
You
have to
hit cancel if you want to get the whole bit. That's Dr. Robert Ballard.
Right.
He's the guy that found the Titanic, I think. I think James Cameron worked with him
on
that. So he developed like the Alvin submersible. He's a genuine oceanologist. And he always had these like fun facts at the end. This was only for the first season, though.
Oh, boo.
When we get to the second season, they had the cast do it instead.
Oh, okay. Well, at least they kept it going, but yeah.
Yeah, they did. There was always a fun fact. Keep it educational in a way. And on some of these later episodes in this season where they got a little bit more sci-fi, they kind of stretched a little bit or just sort of brought in something else that was sort of random that didn't really have to do with the episode, but was still kind of cool.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I like this in particular, indeed. So it reminds me of another one of the shows we've covered here on the Facts Geek Life is a network show called Voyagers, which had one season very early in the 80s. And it was about a time traveling kid and this guy that stumbles upon him. And then they go off and have adventures together. And the kid's name was Jeffrey. And at the very end, they would go through history. And like, it was pre-Quantum Leap, putting things right that once went wrong. So at the end, my friend Jonathan Senator and I do this. And actually, we expect to just do one, but we're now doing our third one because we're like, we love these episodes so much, we're going to break it up and keep talking about it. But at the end, Jeffrey comes in and he does a voiceover over the theme and over, you know, scenes from the credits. He says, if you'd like to learn more about Samuel Gompers and the, you know, union movement in Philadelphia in 1890, visit your local library. It's all in books. This was in 1982. I know. You
That's
should.
So sweet.
If you have Amazon Prime, I would 100% recommend the show to you. So, but anyway, I'm not trying to be too inside baseball and plug in our own stuff. So, any final thoughts about the episode before we move along?
I don't think so. Just it's about hope. And this one had hope. The only other fun fact that I have is that in the episode, it's Hurricane Sheila.
Yes, I loved it. 80s cover band. That's what I wrote.
And and I looked it up in 2018, never actually got to S in the hurricane list. And even if they had, it would have been Sarah.
Oh, boo.
So they made it up for the episode.
I mean, that's a great Fleetwood Mac song, but still.
Which is probably for the best, just in case there was a hurricane, right, Sarah, between then and 2018 that, you know, you didn't want to be.
It would have absolutely shattered the continuity and made this all entirely unbelievable. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's move on.
Yeah.
We jump forward, and then we end up jumping back. And I just put these in whatever order. It doesn't necessarily matter. That's the beauty of it, is that it was not because of, you know, the format of the time. You had a story of the week, just like you did on Star Trek. So you had this, and then you jump forward. But episode 20 is Abalon.
Oh, boy.
This is directed. I think this has to. I don't want to jump ahead and say it's my favorite of the segment, but it just might be my favorite of the segment. Anyway, it's directed by Les Sheldon. The writer is Patrick Hosberg, from May of 1994. Oh, when I was graduating from high school. My goodness. Commander Ford believes he sees a mermaid at the bottom of the ocean during a deep sea dive, and Captain Bridger orders him to take shore leave in a really crappy bar in Florida. I think he was in Florida. and there's a Jimmy Buffett song playing, but I'll get to that later. But while on leave, Ford encounters the same woman again and soon finds himself ensnared in a mysterious scientist's unnatural experiment. This is the very most sci-fi of the episodes that I think we get. Meanwhile, Lucas sneaks away to a party where Juliana, his young lady friend that I was not familiar with, but again, it wasn't really that hard to catch up. And he may go all the way. My notes are all very satirical, so I'll let you do the serious bit, and then I'll do my shtick. So knock yourself out.
This is the episode.
Totally. Oh my god! Totally.
The first one I saw.
Oh, wow! Close to the end of the season.
It was the end of the season. Then I caught up on it on reruns.
Sure. And which we were talking about with Voyager when we were, because I watched most of the third season in
and
reruns.
So how I caught up on the rest of the series was I was on message boards.
So 90s.
Probably
so 90s.
Shouldn't have been on message boards, but whatever.
I don't think so. Yeah.
You know, and people were copying the tapes for each other. And send me the tapes.
That's what I did with Star Trek in the 90s. I taped them, and when I went away to college, my dear mother continued to tape them for me so that I would have a library. Yeah. I had all the TNG, Voyager, DS9 tape with the commercials paused out. So, yes.
Oh, that was nice. Mine had commercials in them.
I know. I mean, the commercials are fun. Have you retained those tapes? Do they exist anymore? Are they lost the history?
I have like one or two of them left.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
I have to get rid of a lot of them.
I have the
whole series on DVD. So
right. I haven't owned a VCR in 15 years, maybe 20 years.
I still have one.
I know. Well, good. That's good. And I'm sure it would, you know, I mean, if you scour any Goodwill, I'm sure you could find one. But I'm sure I still have a videotape of something or other tucked away. So, I mean, they still exist. But anyway, so this was please continue.
This was the first episode I saw. This was my favorite episode of the show. This is the one that, like, I'm homesick from school. It's Next Generation and Abalon from SeaQuest, right? It's like this
off of your tapes.
Episode is like burned into my brain. So, like, it's not like I could completely quote it, but anyway.
Right. Greatest guest star of all time. Oh my god.
Yeah. This has the mythical aspect of the mermaid in it. It has a young woman trying to flee her oppressive family that wants to keep her. You know, it's this trope that I'm like, oh, I'm identifying with this. Not that my family was oppressive. They were great. But I was, you know, this nerdy kid. And
I wanted to
get away and find people that understood me. So, you know. Star Trek and X-Men was kind of my thing.
Totally.
I liked this. It also featured a lot of Lucas. So I was happy with that.
Totally.
Young, small Jen did not like Juliana at all. She was just awful because, you know, when you're young, you got the crush on the cute boy, but
she was a little nerdy girl too. It's not like she was this big buxom blonde, and he's like, just like, you know, like she was gonna
and the thing is that relationship, to talk about that aspect of this, they do establish it earlier on. There's an episode where they're like hacking and he meets her through this like hackers group. And
oh God.
I included this one because it was so 90s.
That's the one with Seth Green, right?
Seth Green and Tim Russ was in that one too. Yeah.
Oh my God. We almost might have to do season one, part two, because that's what Missy and I did with Quantum Leap. We did, it was only nine episodes. No, it was only nine episodes. So we did the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I would be, if we're doing
be
four here
too. There's other episodes. Shatner's in one of these too. Like
we will come back and do another four then. We will do another four, but anyway, please continue.
Yeah. So this, this has, Krieg being kind of the uncle to Lucas, and he's like giving him the sex talk, and he's like, here's a little silver packet that I had, and you're gonna need this if you do something stupid.
So 90210, my goodness.
Yeah, and but like Lucas is he's this like good wholesome kid, and he's just like, I'm not ready, and she's like, okay, and they have that talk and they approach that. That's the B plot of the episode. That's not the main thing. The main thing is Commander Ford and this mermaid that he thinks he sees on this extravehicular test run. And he finds her. She's like, I don't know who you are. He's like, yeah, I saw you underwater. She's like, I gotta go. And she just pieces out into the ocean.
I loved her run down the beach where she's like, I gotta take these shorts. And then she kind of flounders and flips. Mm-hmm. And then the other that was a very low budget location shoot to be like, all right, let's get this one. They're down in, you know, Fort Lauderdale or whatever. And we're like, we'll take this one. Well, no, it was probably all filmed in California. So this is at like La Playa Beach or Manhattan Beach or something down there.
They filmed in Florida.
Oh, they did. Okay. They did. Gotcha. All the studio stuff too.
Yeah. A lot of the second season was filmed at Universal Studios in Florida.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And fun fact, I actually did see some of the filming when they were filming the second season.
What?
Yeah. Because my family happened to be on vacation to Universal at the time. And I was like, we got to go on the tram ride. We got to see where they're filming Sequest. And
oh my gosh, that is awesome.
It was a lot of fun. It was cool. The brothers come out of the ocean. Bridger finds them because he's looking for Ford. And anyway, it all kind of winds up in Ford getting kidnapped by Charlton Heston.
Yes. The guest star of guest star. And this was,
lead.
Definitely in the twilight of his career, because this was 94. And in the summer of 94, the movie True Lies came out with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Arnold Schwarzenegger's character worked for the super secret spy agency that was run by Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was when Chuck, and I think he died in maybe 1998. So this was the last few years of his life. He was still cranking it, and he just nailed this role as this, kind of megalomaniacal scientist who had disappeared, 60, 70 years. So obviously there was some kind of life prolongation with his making mermaids and stuff. So he was, 100 years old or whatever, and still over 100 years old. If you do the math.
You're 132 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's able to, he takes his genetically engineered material and he's making mer people. And of course they have superhuman strength and all this different stuff.
I need to also emphasize that they do not have tails. They just have gills.
Right.
And webbed hands.
Like, they just look like people.
Not seen this.
I didn't even notice the web hand. The gills was she shows Ford at the end once, we jump to the end, and obviously in typical hour long show format, the good guys are successful and they're, Bridger is able to rescue Ford and all this different stuff. And so Ford and, I keep calling her Mer Girl.
Mika
are having their moment. And then she shows off, the gills on her back. What did I also write of this? I thought she had a very weird accent. How would someone from under the seas have an accent?
Yeah.
Wouldn't she just talk like Chuck Heston?
Yeah. You'd think, but
right.
It's the show. It's fine. It's whoever they cast.
Exactly. Oh, there was a great cameo. I'm sorry. When they're on the beach, when Bridger comes to the beach, they're looking for Ford and they have, basically it's their landing party. Like in Star Trek, you have, the security chief, who's the Chief O'Brien character who played a surly, he played a surly Southern sheriff in an early episode of Quantum Leap that Missy and I talked about. But the guy, one of his security guys is an Asian dude who's Dustin Guyan from a show called 21 Jump Street, which was also early in the 80s, but they brought him along just so he could do martial arts, because then he's whipping the shit out of these mermaid people. So I'm like, oh, I saw that coming a mile away.
They keep him on, I believe. They keep him on in the second season. He gets a little bit more of a, he's a Shan. His character's name is Shan.
All right, so, cool. Yeah, good deal.
He's a thing, but yeah.
I love some of the bits about the B plot, you know, Lucas and Juliana. Lucas's buddy Biff, like, what a dumb dumb. The note that I made here is I love the cops who break up the party, city police of the city that they are clearly in. Some of the costuming in this, it was done on the cheap, but I thought the military uniforms, one note I did make is that I come from military family, my dad, my brother, my stepfather. I know how, you know, rigidly things are pressed and stuff. Mm-hmm. And all of the uniforms had great lines and everything, but all of the patches and everything looked very like, somebody made this in their Etsy shop if it was the equivalent, you know what I mean? But yeah, the logo literally said City Police Department.
Yeah.
Which I thought was adorable.
Unspecified
city.
Whatever they've got in the wardrobe department already, probably just.
Right. Sure. Police. Yeah. This did seem very much like, you know, it was, hey, it's the first season of this and we're hoping to make it, but we got to keep the budget slow. I made a couple of notes from the bar when Ford was in the bar. Jimmy Buffett song playing, which was big to me. My mother is a huge Jimmy Buffett fan. And I always love it how when somebody's in a bar on TV and they order a beer, somebody just hands them a beer. You know, here you go. Here's a beer. And it's in a glass, so you don't have to worry about a logo. But yeah, right. I love that deal. But no, this was totally awesome. But yeah, I love the mer people show up and they just beat the crap out of Ford, and then it turns it turns into all that. So this was awesome. So I shouldn't spoil it in case it comes back. But is this the last that we see of Chuck Heston, or does he return?
I think this is the last we see of
him. Boo!
Yeah, it's like it kind of ends with it sort of open ended, but.
Right.
They don't really do anything with it. They take a sharp turn for season two.
They
get rid of like half the cast and replace them with younger, sexier versions. And
oh, God.
Yeah. It gets to that. And then the second season stories are really, they went with a lot more sci-fi, but a lot more contrived sci-fi.
No, that's a drag.
And it's not.
This was more fun.
But
yeah.
This for me was the sweet spot. This episode and the one following it were the sweet spot of this, like, it's still sci-fi, but it's still kind of grounded.
Right, because it's under the sea.
It's under the sea, yeah.
And they don't have, like, ray guns and transporters and stuff. It's kind of like, you know, it's Star Trek under the sea, but it's almost more like Battlestar Galactica, you know, where they have more practical, even though the ships are flying around, they're shooting bullets, and they have to, you know, they breathe air and all this different stuff. So it's just, it's not anything, you know, wacky.
Yeah, there's not anything like magical. There's hints of mystical things because, the thing with Bad Water, I didn't even mention that, was that they were in the Bermuda Triangle.
Right, yes. So, the classic.
But it's like so subtle that it's a Bermuda Triangle kind of thing.
Right.
There's other episodes where they talk about Atlantis or latent psychic abilities, and it's just done in a way that this is kind of plausible, actually.
Right. Right. I love the explanation. There was a lot of real science going back to Bad Water, how, you know, there was a magnetic disturbance coming from an actual locomotive train that had, you know, probably fallen off of a ship or something that landed at the bottom of this trench. And that was what was making nuts. It's like it's very sciencey in a way that is just not.
The Bad Water itself was fresh water. They described it to Darwin as this is bad water, you need to find this so that you can find the sinkhole where people are. So,
exactly. Cool. Any final thoughts before we again jump backwards?
Yeah, I just really like Avalon a lot.
I agree.
Like I was just saying, this is my sweet spot of episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing more to say on it.
Big thumbs up for that one. Cool. All right. Episode 14 is Nothing But the Truth.
Yes.
Director is Les Sheldon again. David Kemper is the writer from January of 94. In preparation for an experiment, this is totally set up to a DS9 episode. Same thing. In preparation for an experiment, the early season two, you have John Glover comes on board to steal the Dax symbiote. What is the name of the episode? I can't remember.
Dax.
No. That's season
invasive
one.
Invasive procedures.
Thank you. The crew evacuates the Sequest, leaving Ford Hitchcock, who I later found out that actress Stacy Heiduck is from Grand Rapids, where I live. So look at that little connection. Lieutenant Creed, Chief Crocker, who's the Chief O'Brien guy, and Lucas aboard. Leave the kid there. That's great. However, environmental extremists use Sequest's vulnerable state to seize control of the boat. Oh, no. Oh, take it away.
Yeah. It's all that group there. Ford is given this option to have his own command. He's kind of got this like Riker problem, right?
Totally.
He kind of wants his own command, but he'd rather be the XO of the Sequest because it's the flagship of the UEO.
Exactly the same.
They're working for. So, you know, we've seen this on Next Gen.
The Enterprise versus the Melbourne. This was in the best of both worlds. Yeah.
Lucas was, he was sort of complaining, like he wasn't supposed to be there. He was like, I got to take care of Darwin and make sure Darwin's okay. And they're like, Darwin's fine. So that was why he was there. It wasn't like they were purposely leaving the kid on the ship during this like dangerous procedure. Right.
True.
The procedure is that they're going to flood the Sequest and they have these siphons that are supposed to get this water off of the boat, which is, you know, Chekhov siphons, right? They use it later in the episode, of course. So the commandos come onto the ship. They want the security codes for a lot of major corporations that have been instrumental in pollution and climate change, which they don't say climate change because they didn't have that phrase yet. They're an eco-terrorists basically, and they want the Sequest's computer and its processing power and its, you know, however it's linked
Nukes.
To whatever it's linked to. Yeah. To kind of blackmail these corporations into doing better. Or they're going to, you know, shut down the security codes and turn off everything. And it does kind of bring up a point because it's like eco-terrorists, you know, you want change, right?
Right.
And they do, I believe, correctly place the onus of the change onto the corporations.
Sure. Right.
This is not the way to do it.
Right. Ends justify the means, and the means are not like, you know, coming on and killing a bunch
Bridger
of people.
Bridger points out that people are going to die if they do this. They're going to lose power.
They're going to freeze or starve.
Exactly. So this is, there's better ways to do this. They mention, one of the reasons that I chose this episode is because it does deal with some of that ecology that Sequest, especially in the earlier seasons, does deal with. It does have a message of, we do need to clean up our act, otherwise bad things will happen. In the future history of the show, they do mention certain acts have passed, certain laws have passed that have helped with the environment. And I think probably there's been more actual progress in reality than there has been in the show.
Right. That's great.
Which is great to hear. But there's still a lot more to do. There's still more work to do because climate change is still real and it is still a problem.
Of course. Even more so with everything that we're seeing, you know, wildfires out west and rising of ocean levels and, you know, the fluctuations in the weather. And it's not going away. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, the question becomes, what can we do? As individuals, the show does not give us an answer. It doesn't tell us what we can do. It's basically just, don't be an eco-terrorist, but there's, you know, it doesn't have a path for us to follow. But in dealing with the eco-terrorists, Ford instructs Hitchcock to tell them the truth at all times. And that's where the episode title comes from, of Nothing But the Truth. Mm-hmm. And he does this because he wants to control what they know so that they have, so that they have a hand up on getting the ship back.
Right.
Which they eventually do by flooding the ship as intended. And
right.
Then there's, you know, water inside, like Darwin says.
Yeah.
That phrase lived rent-free in my brain for so long that, like, any time that, like, the, you know, I accidentally left my car door, car window open and it started raining, I would just say to myself, water inside. Like, oh, I was like, goodness. What are you talking about? I'm like, nothing, just water inside.
Nothing, just let it go. Let it go. Oh, yeah, this was awesome. Yeah, so this was your big, big social commentary, you know, leave you thinking kind of deal. But yeah, very, very Star Trek with, you know, should I stay or should I go?
And he does decide to stay.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah, it's very right. You know, he doesn't have to go through the, you know, the way it was with Riker, you know, Riker should have left because he was made captain. He should have gone off and had his own ship. But in that very next episode, he gives up a pip and he's first officer again. So, and it never comes up again. But anyway, we get it. There's some back and forth here between Ford and Krieg, and Krieg's like, well, I know you're going to give me a bad eval or whatever. And then they go through all this, it sounds like, in the end, Ford gives him, the good evaluation, but I don't know that he gets a promotion out of it. I'm not sure.
Krieg doesn't get a promotion, I don't think.
Nope. Didn't look that way.
But he does get to stay on Sequest, and that's kind of the thing that's at stake. Actually, it's kind of funny because in my notes, it's like, Ford and Krieg has given me kind of Tuvok and Neelix sometimes.
Oh my goodness. I know, even before those characters were around. Yeah, very much so.
You know, I was also in the middle of watching some Voyager episodes for our Code 47 episodes.
Yes, so it all got blended. Kind of in brain. Hitchcock has absurdly blue eyes. I feel like I've never seen eyes quite so blue. I love this, and I saw this a bunch in Quantum Leap. I love it how you can tell extras are wearing clothes that are brand new, like one of the terrorists has super shiny black boots. I'm like, that wouldn't be for real. Lucas has a little computer that looks like a real 90s laptop when he's doing the piggyback bouncing to talk to Bridger off the ship. And yeah, I love that. Very, very super duper nice. I predicted Darwin was going to save the day. I said, if Lucas is Wesley Crusher, then Darwin is like the Daggett from original Battlestar or Tweaky from Buck Rogers. Just a little helper, you know, jump in. The hologram guy in Bridger's quarters, that's actually the waterfall. That's Morgan Shepherd, who's Data's grandfather. He was Ira Graves from season two episode of TNG. Flood the ship to stop the bad guys. Ford's Kobayashi Maru challenge. And it ends up working out. And my last note was, I love this in network TV. I said, I love how dramatically slow the airlock struggles to close in that last season. Like some guy back there who's, you know, turning the crank.
Well, that was intentional too, because they told Chief Crocker, who was injured at the time, but like,
right, yeah,
cross all the wires so that it doesn't, they can't get out because the buttons are all connected to something else.
Right.
So
do a little button mashing like when you're playing a video game. Awesome. Good deal. Any final thoughts before we move on to our final segment?
I don't think so. It pretty much covers it. Lucas's fashion is just a kind of a general note here, is that, you know, he's dressed like it's the 90s because this was made in the 90s and they want to be like this cool kid. And it's like, you can't really predict what a teenager is going to be wearing 25, 30 years later, except you can, because the fashion cycle comes around every 20 years. And guess what the teenagers are wearing these days? It looks like the 90s. They've got the middle parted hair like Jonathan Brandis had. They've got the like baseball t-shirts and the flannels,
jerseys, the wanting
it
pants,
to look like it's, you know, the mid 90s again. So in a way it was weirdly prescient.
Wow. Not bad. Didn't really think about it that way, but you're 100% correct. Yeah. So, well, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Last episode was a super fun one, especially when you find out what the MacGuffin is at the end. But episode five is The Treasures of Tonga Trench. Again, Les Sheldon is directing. Writers are John J. Sackmar and Carrie Lenhart from October of 93. The Sequest is undergoing an inspection by Yapit Kato. Boy, he's really, he's an, another captain. Really, really a weird role for him. Yeah, Picado was on one of the lawyer shows. And was he on In the Heat of the Night? Or I know he was in the original Alien. He was one of the crew members in Alien, 1975 Aliens. But anyway, Ben, you know, so Lieutenant Ben Krieg has a close encounter with an unknown life form in the sea crab in the Tonga Trench. When the creatures let him go, Krieg discovers a treasure trove of mysterious glowing stones, stones that may mean big money. However, is the bigger threat to SeaQuest the greed that overtakes the crew or the unknown life form? Yes. Oh. Educate me. Well, all right. So what's up?
Okay. This episode, this was like the comedy episode, right?
Right.
I mean, I had a lot of fun with it.
Totally.
Krieg gets in, there's the sea monster that shows up. So, you know, again, with the kind of vaguely sci-fi fantasy sea monster, but like, we also don't really know what's living down there. So sure. Huge squid could totally be a thing. We don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the deeper you go. And where is the Tonga Trench in the scheme of things? That's something real, right? Or do they just kind of make it up?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
I don't know off the top of my head.
That's okay.
But yeah. So he's like, have you ever known? I mean, been absolutely certain that you're going to die. And this is how he starts when he tells the story to various members of the crew as he goes on and keeps telling the story to people.
It's his sales pitch.
Right.
It's his elevator speech. Yeah.
What he finds down there is these glowing blue rocks. And he's like, I'm going to take these glowing blue rocks. These are awesome. I'm going to make a fortune on these by just like selling them and flooding, well, not flooding the market, but right. like by selling them and having this rock called Krieglite.
Right. And he's got a guy. He's got a broker guy. So he's right. like, dude, I got these rocks and right. there's just a few of them.
He's
so
he's the supplies and requisitions officer on the SeaQuest. So he's got guys that he gets stuff from and he's got guys that he gives stuff to. So he's got
right.
a guy.
Exactly. He's got a guy. He's got a QVC guy. That's what I said. Yeah. I was talking to the guy is totally yeah. what it looked like. Yeah.
Yeah. And as he's talking to the guy, he's basically talking to him on Zoom, you know, it's these video calls of the future.
Right.
You know, and in the 90s, this was a very futuristic thing. And now it's like, I'm talking to you right on a video call. Here we are. So, that was my note there. Video calls were so future. Now it's just Zoom.
Right.
I feel like Krieg would be the kind of guy to buy an NFT.
He's a crypto dude yeah, too. I'm sure. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely yeah. would be. There's the weird pissing contest between Bridger and Clayton.
Oh my God. Yeah, like, yeah, Picado. He's like, dude, you know, I do 200 push-ups a day. Push-ups. And look how rock hard my stomach is. I'm like, yeah, right, you got a beer belly. What are you talking yeah. about? You
it
know?
Was, it was that was weird.
It was a little homoerotic, and then they were gonna like do a competition or something. Well, I also had no idea that Ben and Hitchcock used to be married. That yes, must have been covered in an early episode.
Yeah, that was I believe that was in the pilot. But they were married, and that does come into play here. She kind of gets in on this whole thing because she finds out that he's got all of these glowing blue rocks in his room and she's like, I don't care about your glowing shiny rocks. I want to know what the sea monster is.
Right.
And so she's curious about that. But
for a while, but eventually she right. gets the sea rock fever yeah. and then
everybody
she's trying to take more of her share and she's like, I want these two. He's like, no, you can't have these two. You can have these two. No, I got to have these two.
Mm-hmm.
So people, but yeah. they're not all identical, but they all pretty much look the same.
Right.
And you find out why
yeah.
at the end of the episode.
But yeah, everyone's kind of getting in on it. Everybody wants a piece of this. So they're like taking all the EVA units out. And I'm like, okay, so the captain's busy with this
pissing match with Yapicado,
yeah, and this inspection, and so he's not really aware of what's going on as far as this everyone finding everything, arguing over these shiny blue rocks, and then their inspector's room, and they're like, man, it smells in here, and the reason it smells in here is because then they finally analyze the shiny blue rocks, it's fish poop.
Oh my God.
It's fish
yeah.
poop. And it's glowing because
it's a shit deal.
The, literally.
And it's growing
because the creatures that are down there are eating other bioluminescent creatures. So right. the chemicals are still in
You
the
are
waste.
What you eat. There you
and
go.
And they're like, yeah, it's probably going to stop glowing within the next 48 hours.
And then his guy who's going to sell the fish shit rocks yeah. to totally abandons him. I actually thought, because again, the third act of this is the sea monster is attacking mm-hmm. the ship. I think on a television budget, the monster didn't look half bad, but it was really dark, which helps.
The CG graphics for this were cutting edge at the time. This was like
big time.
Raws was like, we've got computer graphics for our ship and
I mean
monsters, and
they weren't even doing that on Star Trek until it was into the 2000s when because that's the big problem with remastering DS9 is that all the ship effects are practical.
Yeah.
So they can't simply, slap an upgrade on those in to do HD, which has been this long, long holdout. But it was the last maybe two seasons of Voyager, which were 2000, 2001, where they made a CGI rendering of the Voyager itself. But before that, it was it was that 6-foot model. Mm-hmm. So this was a happy medium between several years later being what Star Trek gave us in those later seasons of Voyager and then on into Enterprise and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. This is in the middle at the other end of super cheap and crappy is Babylon 5, which is a show I can't stand, but we don't need to talk about that. Absolutely not a fan. I see you biting your tongue. That's okay. If you love Babylon 5, love what you love, but
I liked it.
April and I watched the pilot at the recommendation, actually, one of my clients, who is a huge fan, is like, dude, you got to watch Babylon 5, and came home, and it's on HBO Max, or Max as it's now called. We put it on and looked at each other and said, oh, we can't watch the second one. This is so bad. We couldn't stand it. But you know what? I have friends who absolutely swear by it. But anyway, not to get too far off the pitch, the CGI in this show, this really worked, and I think the underwater part of it really helps with the darkness and the different shades and tones. Definitely pulls it off. But this was a fun episode, and this was a fun block of episodes. Kind of takes us to the end. Jen, I want to have you back to do four more. I want you to pick four more. The one with Seth Green and Tim Russ, I really hope is one of the four because I want a reason to watch
That's a huge Lucas episode, so that's another one that I really enjoyed as a
I hear you. And I'm totally fine with not even watching the pilot because I don't feel like I need to see it.
The pilot's not – I mean, it sets up the story, but the episodes themselves are pretty self-contained. So you can watch them as – we did sort of out of order.
Right.
A little bit of a through line, but not.
Yeah. And they have that. And maybe this, and again, reminds me of Quantum Leap, NBC. Obviously it's not the same guy making it. Donald Belisario made Quantum Leap, but they give you that nice introduction where they say, hey, it's a year, it's the 21st century and man is exploring the final.
Mankind has colonized the last unexplored region on Earth, the ocean. As captain of the SeaQuest and its crew, we are its guardians, for beneath the surface lies the future.
That's all you need to know. And then you just know that they're just going to be out there doing exactly that for, 22 to 26 episodes a season. Mm-hmm. And there's just not a lot of heavy lifting. The same thing with, quantum physicist Sam Beckett stepped in the Quantum Leap Accelerator and vanished. He found himself in the past, reliving, lives, blah, blah, blah. His only companion is Al, a hologram from his time. And he's hoping the next leap, someday the next leap will be to leap home. And you just keep watching the show. And you're right, there's no connectivity, and it's totally fine because you could, back in those days, stuff was rerun on USA or TBS or blah, blah, so blah. And you'd be like,
my first episode could be episode 20 of season 10.
Exactly. And it wouldn't tax your brain too much to figure out what the hell's going on. So anyway, this was great. Jen, thank you for this. Yeah, this is the first, I reached out to you when I started doing the show and I said, give me something that I don't know. And you did. Yeah. And it was really magnificent. So thank you so much. I can't wait to get back and do another one of these. And then we can talk about what our next project will be beyond this, because I'm sure there are a myriad of different shows. But how do people find you out there?
All right. So I've got a Linktree. So that is Linktree/JenWatsonArt. I've got my Facebook, my Instagram, my Etsy shop, my illustrations, and a lot of other projects that I'm doing. So come check me out. Come see what I got.
Awesome. Very good. And as always, you can find me over on Twitter at the C3. You can also find me, my lovely wife, and a lot of our wonderful friends over at the USS Grand Petoskey. We are the West Michigan-based chapter of the Starfleet International Star Trek Fan Club. I also run Region 13 for SFI, which is Michigan and Western Canada. If you're a Trekker within that necker, so to speak, visit the website or visit any of our socials, and we can help you find a group of Trekkers where you live. So, friends, as always, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time. Keep on trucking.
And be the sea quest that you want to see in the world.
I love it.